Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. A lot of the radio we air here on KALW begins as an interview. Just two or so people sitting down in a studio or a quiet room and talking. Radio producers can edit hours of interviews down to just a few minutes for broadcast or even into smaller chunks for a news story. The podcast Blank on Blank has this skill mastered. They mine backlogs of lost interviews from famous musicians, comedians, and other notable folks to bring you clips highlighting the funniest, most heartfelt, and all-around best stories from the original recordings. In this episode, Blank on Blank's producer, David Gerlach, met a New Yorker he just had to talk to, even as she was in the middle of a night out on the town.
So we're recording.
Is that recording?
We're ready to go.
So, how did you end up here?
This is Blank on Blank, where lost interviews come to life, distributed by the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. I'm David Gerlach. Zelda Kaplan was 87 when we sat down at a bar in Manhattan. It was around 6 o'clock, but her day wasn't ending. In fact, her night was just beginning. She was getting ready for another amazing night out in the city, starting with a fashion show before dinner and probably dancing at some exclusive nightclub. This amazing woman, approaching 90, had a social life that made mine look pretty lame. It's the legend of Zelda. She'll make you smile. This is Blank on Blank.
In the heart of little old New York, you'll find a thoroughfare. It's the part of little old New York
that... Here I am, very old. Now I'm past 87, I'll be 88. And here I am running around, and I'm very interested in fashion. I like to look nice, and I still love to dance. My friends are dead. I have one friend left, lives in Miami. I have one friend in New York City, who is about 7 or 8 years younger than I, but she's always in a depression. She doesn't want to go out, she stays home. So my friends, with whom should I go out if I don't go out with young people? Who else is there? My friends are all very lovely young people. They're well educated, they have manners, and when I'm around, they don't use the F word.
And every time I see a girl.
Now, I'd first heard about Zelda through a friend. He had met her out one night with some friends, said she just was remarkable, said I had to interview her. She was known as a queen of the New York nightlife. So I asked her, what would be the perfect day and night out in New York City?
I think it would be fun to go to an art gallery opening, which I do generally from 6 to 8, or go to 2 or 3 or 4, and then go to some decent restaurant.
Earlier during our conversation, Zelda had mentioned that she liked to dance. So what about her famous forays to the city's nightclubs? Was that still on the agenda?
Sometimes my friends ask me to join them, so I can do most of it because I'm really a trained dancer. I studied ballet and modern flamenco, all that kind of stuff. But I don't really enjoy it as a social activity unless I'm doing ballroom, dancing with somebody. The young people I know do not know how to dance. It's not easy to learn how to be a good ballroom partner. To me, it's a sport. It's like, can one become a great tennis player with a few moves? Never. And dancing is like that.
When we out together, dance cheek to cheek. Yes, heaven.
I do have some sad news to report. Zelda Kaplan passed away on February 15th, 2012, at age 95. This was 8 years after I got the chance to spend, you know, an evening with her, just get a glimpse into her remarkable life, and she was still going strong. She was actually seated in the front row at a huge fashion show in New York City. She was stylish as always. But moments after the models began walking down the runway, Zelda collapsed. They rushed her to a hospital, but unfortunately, she was already gone. Her death was covered by all the big magazines and newspapers in the city, and I read a bunch of articles, and I found this one quote from Zelda. I think it summed it up pretty well. Zelda said, quote, "I want to keep learning until it's over, and when it's over, it's over." That's all for now from Blank on Blank. If you want to hear more of our lost interviews, interviews you can't hear anywhere else, head over to blankonblank.org. I'm David Gerlach. Keep listening.
Cheek to cheek. Now mama, dance with me. I want my arms about you. The charms about you will carry me through. Yes, heaven.
Blank on Blank is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak.
You're listening to The Spot, the show that features the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. When you're listening to the radio or a podcast, you're hearing a finished product. Somebody decided that whatever it is, investigative story or musical performance, was worth sharing. And work was put into it, ensuring that it would sound as good as possible. If you're doing it well, hopefully it sounds so smooth that the audience doesn't even realize what they're hearing took any effort at all. So it's rare on the radio to hear producers discuss the behind-the-scenes details of how they made the stories you're listening to. The podcast How Sound is all about showcasing the unseen work behind some of public radio's best and most popular stories. This particular episode of How Sound shows how limitations you can face when recording an interview could lead to a story more special than you imagined.
This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. Thanks for listening to How Sound from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. I'm Rob Rosenthal. I was recently scrounging around for a story to feature on How Sound, and my eyes popped out of my head when I discovered I'd never played Hard to Say by Benta Berkland. Benta was a student of mine 10 years ago. Hard to Say won the Best New Producer Award from Third Coast in 2004. The story's incredible. It's so touching. In fact, a friend of mine said she heard it on the radio while she was driving, and she had to pull over. She was crying so hard. The backstory is fantastic, too, but I didn't have time to interview Benta, so I'm going to relate it to you as best I can from memory, after we listen to the story. Here's Hard to Say by Benta Berkland.
My name is Ed Whirler. I live in Waldoboro on Duck Puddle Pond and in the woods. I call my place Whirler's Woods. I live here alone at the time. Being as old as I am, I know that my time is limited here. I get lonesome at times, but it's still a nice place to live. I'm 90 years old. I've been married to Martha, my present wife, since 1988. We both lost our spouses at about the same time, and I had known her for a long time, but not personally. I took her out to supper. Yeah, this was our first date. We had met at the restaurant, so we both had our own cars. So when we were saying goodbye, she got in her car, and I just reached in and gave her a kiss on the cheek. She called me when she got home. She said, oh, she was on cloud nine all the way home. Falling in love is a wonderful experience. It can happen more than once. We had 18 years of a wonderful life. I built the kitchen the way it is so we'd have plenty of room to dance. We'd turn on the TV for Lawrence Welk programs and big band music and dance out in the kitchen. Just dance. There's something about just the nearness of holding that person close to you and feeling the rhythm of the music and everything. When we got together and found out that we had love, it was the beginning of a new life for both of us. The fast pace nowadays, don't think people have time to fall in love and enjoy life the way we used to. And I enjoyed every minute of it. Yeah, I wouldn't change a thing. Gonna take a sentimental journey. And she's now in a Alzheimer's assisted living facility. I go to see her every other day. I'm planning on going this afternoon. She's had symptoms of this for the last 3 years. She fell and broke her leg and was in the hospital. It seemed that during that time her Alzheimer's got much worse, so she didn't come home after that. It's a real nice facility. Most of the patients are women. On the days that I visit, we sit in the lounge on a couch where I can put my arm around her and hug her. The attention I give her seems to draw the other women to us. Before long, all the chairs and the couches all around us are filled with people watching us. I think they all know that in their lives that they've had love and attention. Maybe it helps them, I don't know. I know all of them now pretty well after 2 years. I say hi, hi Betty, hi Margaret, and so forth, and they all wave, and I'll take their hand sometimes and let them know that somebody's thinking about them. A lot of times she'll be sitting in a chair asleep when I get there. We'll go back to her room and sit on the bed looking out sort of a garden. And she gets enjoyment out of watching the cars go by and the people walking. And if a bird flies by, a seagull or something, she'll notice it. Those kind of things seem to mean a lot to her. She can't understand when I'm getting ready to leave, but why can't I stay there? Why can't she go with me? But she can't come up with words. I don't think that she remembers a whole lot. What she does remember, of course, is what happened years ago. She knows that I'm her husband, I'm somebody that she loves, and I'm sure that 10 minutes after I leave, she's forgotten that I've been there.
Good, how are you, Ed?
The unit that she's in, the Alzheimer's unit, is like a sealed unit electronically. I have to punch in a code number to get the door to open. They have a tape player in the dining area. Quite often they'll have a Guy Lombardo or one of the big bands, you know. Several times I've taken her in my arms and we danced right there with all the other little ladies watching this, and they're all envious, I think. But she can still follow me. If the point comes, which it probably will, when she won't recognize me anymore, then I might not go as often as I do now. It's hard to say.
Benta Berkland produced that story in 2004. She was my student at the time, back when I was teaching at the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies. Her story's called Hard to Say. Here's the backstory on this piece. It involves a complete reinvention of the story when plans didn't work out. Not just once, but twice. Benta found Ed through a press release from a publisher. Ed had written a book about his years as a fire tower watchman up near Mount Katahdin in Maine. Benta gave Ed a call, asked if he'd like to be interviewed. Ed said yes, and so Benta headed out for the interview. The plan was to interview Ed at his house, and then, if he was willing, and despite his age, take a trip up to Baxter State Park and walk around a lake at the base of the mountain. Ed would reminisce, Benta would record. Simple, right? But when Benta got back from her interview with Ed, she was exasperated. She said they talked for like an hour, but Ed did not want to talk about the book. Not at all. In fact, he'd say things like, "It's in the book, just read it." And Benta would say, "Yeah, but this is for the radio." It's kind of funny, right? But nothing worked. So Benta was feeling a bit dejected about the whole experience. So in class, we asked her, well, what did he talk about? His wife, she said. What about his wife? Well, she has Alzheimer's and she's in a special facility. Well, as you might imagine, we sort of blinked in surprise and said, well, go talk to him about that. If he's willing to talk about his wife, their relationship, her illness, and what it means for him to lose her in that way, the story could be incredible. Well, Benta agreed, and so we started to make a plan, a new plan for the story. Now, longtime listeners to How Sound will know I'm all about planning, even so far as to have an outline of how the story might be told before you report it. But plan in pencil, in case your sort of hypothesis about the story doesn't pan out. Well, the penciled-in plan for the story with Ed went like this. Start the story with a visit, then go back in time to how they met, followed by the diagnosis and its impact, and then go back to the visit. Something like that. Again, that's just a rough sketch of how the story might be told. So Ed agreed to be interviewed about his wife and their relationship, and off went Benta with her mic and a slew of questions. She returned jazzed, but disappointed again. Jazzed because Ed was so generous with his time and he gave great answers to all of her questions. But Benta was disappointed because Ed didn't want her to record a visit. No microphones at the Alzheimer's facility, he said. Ed thought his wife would be seen in an unflattering light, and he thought it would be unfair because she wouldn't really know what was going on. And that's a totally reasonable response, by the way. But you know what that meant. A major scene in the story wasn't possible. In our plan, seeing Ed and his wife together was essential. The story would be incomplete without it, we thought. We spent a lot of time trying to figure out another way to tell the story, and somewhere in that discussion, a new plan emerged. First, get the scene inside, but get it from Ed's interview tape. In other words, have Ed describe in great detail what it's like inside, what he and his wife do during the visits, who else is there, the dancing. And the second part of the plan, record Ed all the way up to the door of the facility. Record him getting into his car, leaving the garage, driving, getting out of the car, walking up, opening the door, get everything, and end the piece with Ed walking through the door. When he goes in, listeners will already know what happens. And that's how that story came to be. Hard to Say by Benta Berkland. It was a Third Coast Award winner in 2004.
How Sound has over 90 episodes you can listen to anytime. Hear them all at transom.org or subscribe to the How Sound podcast on iTunes. Last year, independent radio producer Mary Quintus started interviewing a band. What she thought would be a simple profile expanded into a story of not only music, but of love and loss and the obligations we're called to fulfill, whether we want to or not.
The All Worn Out Jug Band is made up of members of the Unitarian Church in Chatham, Massachusetts.
1, 2, 3, 4.
As you can hear, their version features kazoos instead of horns. Well, there is one trumpet of a sort.
I play an instrument that is the size, shape, and look of a bugle, but inserted is a kazoo in the top of the bugle.
It's called a trumpazoo, and that trumpazoo player is 83-year-old Bud Brown.
My name is Elliot Brown. My friends call me Bud.
And Bud actually plays two instruments.
Sometimes simultaneously. I play a washboard. I strum it with a wooden end of a spoon.
Bud's a kind of triple threat in the band. In addition to playing the trumpazoo and the washboard, he sings. When the band started 15 years ago, they introduced him to a song he'd never heard before. Since then, he's been singing it at nearly every gig.
The one that goes in part, everybody's worrying about what and where they all came from.
Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody's worried about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. I'll just let the mystery be.
What is the song about?
Well, it's essentially the problem that we all have. Nobody knows what's going to happen when they die. No one knows for certain, so I'll just let the mystery be.
Let the Mystery Be was written by singer-songwriter Iris DeMent. It was released in 1992, when she was 31 years old.
Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from.
Everybody is worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me. I think I'll just let the mystery be.
I've often wondered how the woman who wrote the song, Iris DeMent, the young woman, wondered how she got to it, where she was. But it fits me. And it may not ever have taken on the meaning kinds of things that it has for me if I had not been put in that position of doing it for my wife, according to her wishes before she died, about her death.
How did you meet your wife?
I was invited to dinner one time. They had also invited her. I suspect that that was no accident, which is fine because it just worked out beautifully. Yeah, she was adorable. We soon were pretty sure that we were fated to be together. And so we were.
After two daughters, two granddaughters, and 40 years of marriage, Pat was diagnosed with cancer. She was hospitalized in Boston, while Bud remained at home on Cape Cod.
So how often did you see her if she was at the hospital in Boston?
Oh, not nearly often enough, but maybe once a week. It just took way too much out of me. Took too much out of her, too. You know, it sort of held the mirror up to her, like saying, look, you're dying, kid. She never said don't come. She put it other ways, like don't overdo it. Don't be silly. Call me, which we did a lot.
When Pat realized she was dying, she planned her own memorial service. She made arrangements by phone from her hospital bed.
It was just amazing. I mean, it is so her. You know, she would step in, take charge, do this, do that. I mean, she had gall. She was splendid.
And she had a special request for Bud.
She asked me, and of course I agreed, to sing at her memorial service, Let the Mystery Be.
So why do you think she asked you to sing the song?
She was facing the mystery. If you find it mystifying, that's okay. It's all right with me. Let it be all right with you.
Pat passed away in the hospital in 2006. A few months ago, Bud lost someone else. Phil Thompson, a founding member of the band, passed away. Around the same time, the stepson of one of the other band members also died. Each of the families asked Bud to sing at the memorial services, and the request, Let the Mystery Be.
And it has almost become a tradition. I don't enjoy it only because it's so damn sad, but I can't say no because it's a duty and it's a gift. It's, in one sense, a joy to be able to do it, and for another sense, it's a heartbreaker.
You would think after all these years, I'd have it down pat, but my memory is such that it's got a lot of leaks.
It's still a release, in a way, to sing it and to have people cheer me after they've heard it, that it's as if it gives them some turn of relief to them, to their family, and to the audience in the church. And I'm delighted to do that. I try to find a way to collaborate with the mystery. Let's see. Mystery song. There we are. Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody's worried about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. I'll just let the mystery be. I know that I'm in my 83rd year. I have a limited amount of time, and I may be annoyed at it and disgruntled. Damn, I wanted to do this other thing. But only because I'm having fun, and I don't want it interrupted. I enjoy most all of it, and I'm delighted to have had it. But I know sooner or later I go where the millions have gone, wherever that is. I mean, it's the mystery. It's the mystery.
Some say once you're gone forever. Some say you're going to come back. Some say you rest in the arms of a savior, fixing the ways you lack. Some say they're coming back as a garden, carrots and little green peas. I think I'll let the mystery be. Some say they're going to a place called glory. I ain't saying it ain't a fact. But I've heard that I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that. But I believe in love, and I live my life accordingly. I choose to let the mystery be. Yes, I'll just let the mystery be.
From Cape Cod, this is Mary Quintus.
You can find more of Mary's work up now on PRX.org. We'll also have a link to an article Mary wrote about her experience producing this story up on our website, KALW.org.
Woke up this morning, put on my slippers, walked in the kitchen and
that's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at KALW.org. Just look on the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot, and then click them. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for a whole new episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco. Actually, before I go, I'd like to leave you with a special little bonus from the podcast Random Tape. This week, scientists discovered a new species of giant prehistoric reptile called the Nundashusis. In honor of the discovery, here is probably the best, and definitely the cutest, impersonation of a dinosaur I've ever heard. Here's Random Tape host David Weinberg.
So I was at a family reunion this summer, hanging out with my little cousin, Gavin, and we were just messing around, and he does this amazing T-Rex impersonation. So I recorded it, and it's just this nice little moment that we had. Oh man, there's another T-Rex still left in the world.
Oh man, it ate someone.